like all good farmers, we have two farmers who text me and had the calling of the farm, and they are en route and a little delayed, so we might have to, Jenny and Nick will be joining us any moment. But if you want to pull up our slides, we could talk about all the health benefits for having local foods while we, so meat, local meats, if you want to, Nick's mic. David Perkle, Lisa and Dennis Hebel, and Nick and Jenny will be with us shortly. And if we go to the next slide, if each of you guys could just, you want to introduce who you are and where you're at and what you produce?
I'm David Perkle. I live just right outside of Iowa City West. I produce sheep, goats, and then I do cow-calf also.
And the next slide.
I'm Dennis, and this is my wife, Lisa. We also live out west of Iowa City, actually right next to David and next to Bob and Christy. I've been farming.
Close, local. Talk about local.
I've been farming for, well, I just turned 59 last Monday, so 59 years. Anyway, I retired in 2010 and took over the farm. So currently we're raising cow-calf, corn, beans, and whatever else, hay, oats, everything else. So we're all local. I do sell local beef.
Okay, that's all you need right now.
No,
keep going, keep going.
Okay, yeah, I like to talk. Anyway.
Which Nick and Jenny will thank you.
We are local, and again, we still don't get a lot for our product, and that's why we're here today, to kind of promote our local products.
Yeah. And Lisa, can you just put one small plug in? Lisa teach. Not only is she a farmer, but she teaches, and one of the classes that you teach.
I do teach nutrition through Kirkwood Community College. It's more of a dental focused. I'm a little bit more focused on the teeth than the rest of the body. But I think one of the most important things that we do is I'm a beef snob. I don't know if any of you are food snobs, but we are beef snobs. And we prefer our beef over a lot of other beef. But I think one of the biggest concerns that we have, and I loved Michelle's plate, My Plate that was produced by the Obamas. I think one of the biggest concerns that a lot of people have about eating proteins is they're worried about getting fat and about the fatty meats. And I think we can control that a lot more when you're on the farm. And just one thing to always think about is a portion size is so different than what we are actually eating. A portion size is about the size of a deck of cards, and it's 3 ounces. So you should be having 5 to 6 ounces of protein a day. And if you think about all the protein that we're having, when you process your own meat and you can package your own meat, you can control your portion control a lot more than when you go to the stores and also when you go to restaurants. So the problem also, like Donna said, is the prices of meat has been going down. We have a lot of beef coming in from Brazil. So when you talk about transportation, that's coming a long ways, and they're not regulated like we are. So growing locally and eating locally, I think, is huge for our bodies and for our health. So hopefully we can give you some ideas.
And one of the big impacts when you're transferring that, when it's fresh, that's when it's at its height of nutritional value for you. And the longer it's sitting on the shelf, the longer it's in transit, the more value it's losing for you. It's not as healthy for you on that trip. So we will, next slide, Nick and Jenny, who will be hopefully here shortly, produce pigs and poultry, and we will catch them up on the second part of this. So this is envision, we're in the living room, we're having coffee, it's Saturday morning, the calves have just been born, the sheep, and we're just chit-chatting here. And so we just have a couple questions, and these guys are going to, in our living room, be answering these questions. So number one, why should the consumer, these people out here, private families, business institutions, want a preference to your local offerings to meet their meat needs?
So you can see where it's grown at. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. You can see the farm and right where it's grown at. I feel that's the biggest thing.
I think, you know, also is that, you know, what's coming from your meat, you know, how's it fed? Is it grass fed, grain fed, antibiotics? Is it, what's it do, you know, for you? It's grown right here. You can go back and look and say, you know, this is grown locally, and this is what I'm putting in my body.
And I think one of the other things to look at is everyone is always so concerned with how our animals are being treated. Y'all need to understand, we're coming off 3 hours of sleep. We've been bottle feeding for every 3 hours. Our cows are like family. We have them all named. I know that's hard to believe, but we do have them all named. And we do treat them like family. And we firmly, firmly, firmly believe that their lives should be just like us. I mean, we want to our life to be great, 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 great. And then we're moving on. And that's how we like to treat our animals. We treat them with the most respect. We love on them. Most of my Facebook pictures are selfies with my calves. But we love on them. These are important to us. They're not on a feedlot. Days aren't on a feedlot either. They're on grass. They're running. You can come out and visit them in the middle of the summer when they are playing soccer with each other and running all over the fields. They're not on a mud feedlot. So when you do grow locally, we're small. We don't have 500 head of cattle. We have
60.
60. David, what do you have for 50. Numbers? 50 and sheep?
Sheep 23 and then around 24 goats.
Right. So we can keep track of them. We can keep them healthy. We bed them down at night and cover them with blankets and put sweatshirts on them when they're cold. So
Put them in the basement.
I treat my animals better than most of my family members.
I would agree.
Like every good farmer. Great. So the next question. Yay. Well, wait a minute. We've got two more farmers we want to join. Here. And I can say we also raise livestock, and we like to say that there's only one bad moment in their life. So they live a very happy, free-range life until that one moment. There's no extra adrenaline running through their bodies before they end up with their purpose versus having a semi driving down the road with feathers blowing all over. It breaks my heart to see that happening. So Nick and Jenny, do you guys want to
rewind?
Yay. Curses to be put as the first panel this morning, right? Do you want to just say who you are and what you raised real quick?
I'm Nick Koster, and this is my wife, Jennifer Vasquez Koster.
Microphones are, you want to move a little closer to it.
And we raise pastured pork and chicken, and we also have do some real small-scale egg production and turkeys occasionally. So.
Yeah, and we won't go backwards. We'll just catch you up on the questions that moving forward. So what should we be looking for when buying local? If these guys were interested in, what are some of the things that you would advise them when they're deciding which farmer they should be buying local meats from? What would you advise? How do they make that assessment?
Well, I think that I think the first question for me is what actually is local. And I think that sometimes there are products that are regional, that are good products and raised responsibly, but maybe they're from larger producers. And sometimes I think we all take those options when, as we know, like local supply chain, especially in these areas that are more developing markets, aren't set up quite as well yet. So one of our challenges is consistency of product. And, you know, like there's a lot of people that really like our bacon, but sometimes, you know, we don't have enough bacon to supply the market, or because of processing bottlenecks, we have the carcasses or the animals, but we can't get the product in the store. And so there's kind of some gray area there. But I would say what I personally look for, I think, is, you know, obviously an idea of where the farm actually is. And most of our customers are people that actually at some point have met us or have some connection to us, have an idea of who we are through maybe some of the restaurant sales and those type of things. As far as like, what do you think, Jen?
I agree with all that. And then I would just add to, you know, look for quality. And I think that's something, like I always say a lot between like us local farmers, is that we should compete on quality and not on price. And so I would say as a consumer, you know, look for that quality because that helps push us as farmers to produce something better. And that's like one of the benefits of eating locally is you really are legitimately getting significantly better food. And so look for that, you know, look for that good food.
Anything else I want to add to that? And I would just say buying local helps your community keep the money at home. You're keeping the funds and growing at home versus sending resources outside the community. You're helping keeping your community strong. So investing those dollars in your local farmers helps them keep putting out the quality product that we all want to be eating at our table. Anything? So you want to go to the next question? So what is the process that it takes to get it from your farm to their freezer? So
The one thing I think that's the hardest for people that are used to buying your meat at the grocery store, which is a great option, is that when we raise beef, product, they're only available at certain times. So we only sell beef because of the way that we're calving right now. So our beef would not be ready until...
Year from June.
No, July. We won't have any calves for sale. Or I mean, any beef for sale.
Oh, from the ones born now.
Yeah.
Okay. Right now, our beef would be ready probably June, July, from last year. The ones born last year will become heavy enough to eat June or July of this year.
So I mean, it's not like you can walk out and go, I'll take that one, and I want all steaks, 2 pounds of hamburger, and maybe a filet and 2 roasts.
And the other thing is you got to use the whole animal,
right,
too. So there's a lot of things people don't want on those animals a lot of times, and you got to learn how to cook that stuff, too. Mm-hmm.
But that is something that has been interesting for us is that, you know, there have been some good, like PFI had a really good short course a couple years ago about, I think it was called...
PFI is?
Practical Farmers of Iowa, good. Which is a... statewide organization that kind of helps put together different farmers that are kind of looking to do, I would say, more progressive or environmentally friendly farming would probably be an easy way to, you know. At any rate, they had a good short course that was called, Nose to Tail, which was all about utilizing some of these, what we've in a friendly manner called odd bits. And, you know, one thing that's been interesting, like with the, you know, some of our product was used at Devotee, for instance, and we also had some stuff in at the cheese shop down in Des Moines and the cheese bar down there. And it was even on the opposite end of that, some of those things like livers, you know, hog liver, who buys hog liver here? Anyone? Anybody buy a hog liver? Wow. All right.
But that surprises us.
Yeah. And it's interesting, though, because, you know, liver coming from CAFO animals is... Who wants to eat that? But places doing more specialty foods were really interested in getting pastured hog liver for pâtés and stuff like that. And so that's something that we actually had a run on that we didn't expect.
We couldn't raise enough animals for their livers.
Yeah.
Like, who would have ever in a million years thought that? Yeah.
But I think you, summarized it pretty well as far as some of the challenge and some of the things that we would hope that we could inspire people to get a little more inventive with is maybe getting a little bit outside of your comfort zone. And maybe it's not just bacon and chops, but maybe you do want to try some of these other things like trotters and hawks and things like that can be really delicious things to braise or stew. And it's not something you might necessarily think of when I'm going to the supermarket and I'm really hungry for some pork, but they can be really wonderful things. And there's a lot of great recipes now, you know, available. It's as easy as just, you know, Googling something. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
good.
Good.
Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead.
Are all of you part of PFI?
We are not.
I am not.
The question is, which of the panel members are a part of Practical Farmers of Iowa, and if not, why not?
I haven't heard of it.
We are associated with a lot of cattlemen association like that, and they do the work kind of for us through the Practical Farmers. They're connected very well to Practical Farmers, so I do that through the National Cattlemen's Association and also the local Cattlemen's Association. So we pay our dues. Checkoff dollars. That's where our checkoff dollars go. As far as Practical Farmers, we support them very, very well. Do that through those organizations.
Do you all get checkoff dollars?
Yeah, every time you sell.
We do not. Yeah. And so I don't know what your operations are like, and I'm sorry, maybe that's because we like are busting in here late. But since we're doing the direct to consumer pork production, we don't receive any checkoff dollars from pork.
And so what is a checkoff dollar?
You all could probably explain that better.
Yeah. Checkoff dollar is every time you sell an animal or buy a product, there's a checkoff fee. And I think it's like 1% or 2%, maybe 3%. You pay that every time you sell, even if corn, beans, or whatever product you sell, there's checkoff dollars. And that goes into advertisement, any type of business media and stuff like that. It goes towards those organizations.
It's kind of like a self-tax.
Yeah, exactly.
Self-tax.
Right.
Because we need one more tax. Yes?
So as a consumer, I'd be interested in learning what do your animals eat, where is it sourced, and what happens to the waste?
So all of mine is mostly hay grown right on my farm and pasture ground during the summer. And all the waste goes back into, I do a little bit of row crop just to rotate out of my hay and pasture ground, and that goes all onto my row crop stuff.
So, and for the TV, the question is, what do the livestock eat, and where is it sourced, and how do you work the waste? And which David answered.
I say for us, like, we could start with the farrowing piece, right? So the farrowing piece, like, you know, what it, like, for me, this question is, like, what does it take to get the meat to your freezer? It starts with, you know, breeding pigs, and so creating a safe space for these animals where they have access to the outdoors is important on our farm, and also, you know, fresh water, which isn't frozen in the winter, which, like, Nick is good at that kind of stuff. You know, and having that, like, bedded structure for them with, like, deep bedded hay so that they're warm and cozy. And kind of, you know, working on that farrowing piece so that we have these tiny little adorable baby pigs that we have to keep safe from predators, which, like, you guys have lots of adorable baby pigs right now. It's, like, kind of the most fun time about, you know, all of this stuff. But there's, like, on our farm, we have depredation from eagles. We have foxes. We have coyotes. And so it's kind of working to keep those animals safe as well as fed and warm and all of those pieces. We feed alfalfa hay. We plant about 2.5 acres of pasture for our animals that they have access to from usually about April till November. And then we also get brewer's grains from a brewery here in Iowa City. And so that's like, what's in that? Barley?
It's mostly two-row barley. It's actually kind of a nice, it's all, you know, human-grade stuff going in. We practice organic practices, but we are not organically certified. And so, like, the alfalfa and hay that we feed out is from another local farmer he is a certified organic farmer. Mm-hmm. But we do supplement with some non-GMO corn in our feed. And if we do ever feed a commercial ration, it's the one that is approved for Nyman Ranch, which is another kind of larger producer. But it's the easiest thing to be able to go to the feed store in kind of an emergency, like, it's, you know, 2 feet of snow and we're out of feed and I don't want to feed stuff that has any chemicals or antibiotics in it. And that's a recognizable recipe that a lot of feed stores will carry because Nyman Ranch is so big and they have a lot of producers. If I might just really briefly touch on your question as well as far as food to waste. Ours is basically all also applied back to our land, and a lot of it is just applied by the animals themselves out in the pasture. We do have
best way to work the soil into health is to
and we do also have some areas that we use in the wintertime that we call sacrifice areas, so we don't after there's snowpack on the ground or when it's really rainy or muddy, we try to limit their access to the pasture areas because it will get torn up and muddy and kill a lot of the perennial plants and stuff that we have out there. So those areas tend to build up more manure, so then that manure will get scraped and composted and applied to like produce production areas or back out in the field.
I'm trying to think, like, how do we describe raising these animals and everything we have in place in like 3 minutes?
We have 10 more minutes.
Right?
So
like, you all recognize it's a lot of work, but like those nuances of everything that goes into it, you know, yeah.
The permaculture is really important. That their waste is food for our soil and helps our soil become healthy and more productive. And so the best way you can keep your farm healthy and the land healthy is letting those who are grazing off it distribute the nutrition back to the soil across the soil. So,
okay, question.
So I'll repeat that question. Can you talk about how you work with the lockers and custom orders and the schedule around it? Was that close to the?
Yeah, just so the audience understands.
Yep. So you want to take that?
Yeah, I'll answer that question. I'll come back to how we. Your question. Our process is I like to take orders probably September, October. Call the locker, and I usually have anywhere from 6 to 10 locker vacancies every year, June, July time frame. Then about August, September, when I take those orders, I can call the locker and say, hey, I get this many people that want this much beef, and that's the process. So usually we calve them in March, April, come around September, October from the year before, and see how many I need to hold back to put in the, you know, the feed out. And then call the locker, say, this is how many people I got to. Then once you take them in the locker, I like to see them, you know, be there about 10 days, hang. So they get the juices mowed, and then usually pick up about 10 days after I deliver them.
But it's up to the actual customer to contact the locker. We give them the number, they contact the locker, and then they make a decision with the people at the locker of how they'd like their meat packaged.
Pounds,
number of items.
How many items you have, one per package, what you want to do with what. Yeah. So if you want more steaks, or if you want more hamburger, you want more roast, whatever you want. Okay. Now back to your question. We save all our girl cows, heifers, to reproduce. I do buy bulls outside just so we don't get the mixture there. So I replace all my old cows with my own stock, buy my own bulls. Again, we start the breeding season in end of May, first part of June. So they usually start calving about this time of year. They're supposed to start calving yesterday. Already had, 6 babies already? They're supposed to start yesterday. We had 4 yesterday. Had two sets of twins so far. But that's how that works. And then we start feeding them the baby calves. The mama cow will feed the baby calf. It's about June, July. And then I put the baby calves on what we call a creep feeder. And that comes from town. It's kind of like a baby food for those baby calves. A lot easier on the cow. The calf is not more sufficient on the cow. It breeds the cow back quicker. It's easier on the cow. The cow doesn't get run down, doesn't get sick. So they don't have to use any of those antibiotics. It's a lot easier on the cow, the calf. Then I usually wean the calf away from the cow. Usually, all it depends on the weather. I like to get the weather where it's decent. It's not rainy. It's not bad weather. So it's a lot easier transition. And that creep feed that we start feeding them in June, July, when I transfer them over to weaning ration, there's no stress on the half of the calf. The cow will come to the fence and bellow for the cow, and the calf will look at that cow like, what do you want? The cow, you know, she's used to getting that nursing every day, and she don't get that. She gets kind of angry, all right? But the calf doesn't seem a bit. They take off, and then I have a ration that spends over about 6-week period to convert them from that creep feet ration to what I call a full ration, which is hay, which I grow my own hay, corn, and then a little bit of protein to give them a little bit of supplements like we do with our own food. And then usually in November, I don't feed our cows out. November, I usually take them to sell barn, to a local auction barn, and they go on from there.
Anything different? About the same?
That's about the same.
I could, if I sure. got a second, yeah. comment on, I think that I like that question just because it's been a real challenge for us in our business as far as the scheduling and processing goes. Something that we found in this area, and I think it's really a nationwide thing, although some of it has to do with state-by-state law, is what I easily would refer to, I guess, just as a processing bottleneck. And so there's a few processors within a couple hours of Iowa City, or we're in the Tama area up there. However, they're really overutilized. There was another processor that had a fire and burned and was closed for a couple of years. There's another one that closed. And when we're selling wholes and halves, which we do occasionally, that can be custom processed. And custom processed means that it's the facility is inspected, but the animals themselves are not. And of course, the processors aren't going to process an animal that is sick in appearance or,
it's still safe.
It's still safe, yeah, basically. But the other part of our business is a lot of what's legally referred to, I guess, as third-party sales. And that's where we're having our product processed and wrapped up into individual packages like one might buy at the co-op or the supermarket. And so that needs to be state or federally inspected. Now, for my understanding, we haven't ever done any federal processing because you need much larger groups of animals. And even though we could potentially schedule that, then you have to have a crazy amount of storage for that stuff or a really fast turnover in your market, which we just don't have. So what we typically do is the state inspected third party, which means that when our animals go in for these third-party sales, we have to decide what we want the product turned into, which is really challenging, and it's kind of predicting, often we'll have some of our sales will be a restaurant that has a special event and they want 300 pounds of shoulder. Well, or 100 pounds might be more realistic. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but still 300 pounds. Okay. So, but point being is that might take all the shoulder and then some that we have in the freezer. Well, then what happens to all the other markets that we have where they want a combination of things, or somebody just wants to stop by and buy, 15 or 20 pounds for a family barbecue they're going to have. And also, all the odd bits start to build up. What do I do with, 20 pounds of kidneys? and then furthermore, the other issue with that is that these processors, because they're so utilized, and it's very expensive. It's very hard and expensive for them to expand, which means that you have to plan all these dates ahead of time. And so sometimes, when somebody says, I have an event coming up next month. Well, it would have been nice to know that 8 months ago. And sometimes you can weasel something in there if you do a lot of business with somebody. But more often than not, there's somebody that's been doing it for 30 years that's going to get that slot if something opens up. So it's very, very challenging. And I think a lot of people have these ideas, and people that are maybe more connected to the farm community, I hear people suggesting that... people put these mobile processing units together and then they can go around and we can serve our own community that way, and we should all go in on something like that. And that might be possible sometimes with poultry, but with like cloven animals and pigs and cattle, it's not even in the ballpark of realistic as something that's possible to do. I mean, these facilities, in order to even be state inspected, they need their own office and bathroom just for the inspector as part of how it's written under the law. So it's millions and millions of dollars to build a compliant facility where you can do third-party processing. And that might be a little bit of a tangent, so I'll end there. But
yeah. That is one of our last questions. Okay. There's been a lot of discussion about having mobile butchery where they refurbish a semi, have it all stainless steel, work coordination with a FDA inspector, and they would come to the farm. And so the neighbors could, instead of having to, since access to a locker is very difficult right now, we don't have enough and it's less stressful for the animal if you butcher on site. It's not possible, I believe, for something as large as calf, but thinking goats, sheep, chickens, turkeys, mm-hmm. pigs, that it is something that they could do, but you don't think a pig is something they could do in the in those?
I mean, I, you know, have limited experience with the legalities of it, and I think it's certainly something that I would strive for and think it'd be fantastic if it could be done. I know chickens and turkeys, it has been done.
We do a lot of processing on our farm for customers that are okay with us doing that for them.
Mm-hmm. But it's also people who are purchasing the animal on farm and they are working with us processing the animal. They want to learn the process. It's more of an educational type of process, and they're excited about the education and getting their hands dirty, you know, so it's not
For all of us, we've all lived on the farm here and we've all processed many of the animals that are in our freezer, because that's what you did when you grew up on a farm, much like a hunter would do. So
as far as the cattle, as as far as cattle, usually you want a cow to hang anywhere from 7 to 10 days just for that meat, just to get the juices and the marbling and everything like that. I always recommend my cattle, when I process my own meat, I have my locker, let it hang for 7 to 10 days after, you know, processing, just to get those the marbling and everything in the right spots.
All right, so midpoint. Next question. What, if any, are the challenges that you would like the supervisors or consumers to be made aware of as a farmer of local foods? And I think we've probably covered some of this, but here's your opportunity to...
My biggest thing is pricing. I've had quite a few people come out to the farm, and they think they're going to get it for half price, and it's just not going to happen. That's one of my biggest things. Mm-hmm.
I think we have some, I think all of this is an education process, and that's part of what's challenging about the scalability of it and trying to make it to where people might be able to earn a living wage with it, because I think the analogy that I tend to just throw out to easily explain, well, why isn't this, you know, cheaper because you're cutting out the middleman and all this stuff, is, you know, I think the best way of putting it is there's more time and money in treating animals in a more ethical and way and raising them with higher quality feeds and stuff. But I also kind of like to say back, you know, to the people who are more of an economical shopper, most people don't think twice at all about stopping by the convenience store and spending $10 on a six pack of beer. But they're the same people that'll go to the supermarket and say, well, I'm not going to buy organic milk. It's $4 a quart instead of two, you know? And so I think it comes down to the decisions that you want to make for your family. And I think that there's more and more evidence that all of these type of foods that are raised in a less stressful and more humane environment and fed more responsible feeds and stuff are really more healthy. I don't have, you know, it's anecdotal, but I think there are some scholarly studies that have shown that animals raised on pasture as opposed to just fed commercial grains and stuff have much better levels of the beneficial omega-3s in their fats and all these type of things, and they're better tasting. And I mean, you can really legitimately taste the difference. And I know there's a lot of naysayers that say, oh, there's no difference, but there's a visual difference in our meat from your typical pork. I know that. And I know a lot of beef and poultry producers that would say the same thing. So
I agree. Yeah.
And I know for buying hamburger, I think hamburger is the easiest thing to look at. You can get a really inexpensive pound of hamburger, but it's going to be 80%, which means there's 20% fat. When we cook our burger, I sometimes have to add water just to give it just a little bit of liquid. There's no fat. If you cook it slow, that fat burns off, absorbs into the meat, and there is no, I mean, I've never had to drain or run water over any of our hamburger. So you're paying for a 90%, 95% hamburger. And again, when you buy an animal, you buy the animal. You buy the quarter or the half. So you're looking at a lump sum, right? So sometimes when people want to come in and get a whole hog or a lamb or something, you're buying a big piece of meat, a half or a quarter. All of that goes into your refrigerator, your freezer, and that's your meat that you have for the year. So it's not just like going and picking up a 5-pound you know, a $5 pound of hamburger, you have all of that in your freezer, which is great because there's nothing better than walking out to your freezer and picking that up. I micro farm, so I mean, I have my own salsa, and yes, everything can be made from the ground in salsa, so you were okay. You just have to cook it a little bit. But it's so fun to have people over and go, oh my God, your spaghetti sauce is great, and your hamburger is great, and I've never tasted anything like this, and your roasts are great. Uh-huh. They are, because I know what's in them, and we cook them. We know, you learn to cook them, and you're not messing with some of the other products and byproducts that are put into a lot of this stuff that's on the market.
Jenny, would you want to touch a little bit, I know this is maybe more meat-centered, but just on the idea from the produce end of things and food hub stuff and scalability, because I think that's an important overall key to this scenario too.
Yeah, I mean, like, especially for the supervisors, you know, looking at what policies and what support farmers need in place. Definitely, I think, like, anything the county can do to support aggregation and distribution is huge, because marketing costs end up being a huge piece of it. Basically, all of the costs that we have in marketing essentially eat up any chance that we might have at making any money, you know, making a living. And so anything that the county can do to help support, whether that's helping get like our name out as farms, like what our product is, but also helping with storage and aggregation and that food hub concept, which is just like a centralized location, typically a nonprofit. Iowa City, you know, has one, and, you know, and is working on this, but just a central area that farmers can bring our product to and somebody else could help maybe with those sales. You know, there's a lot of different ways that that can look, but any support on that vein would help. I don't know. How does that work for you guys? Like, you guys have chosen wholes and halves, I'm guessing in part because of the marketing piece.
Or what people, size of families and things
and size
like
of
that.
Family. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People want, and it's fun because people want a quarter of beef, but they would like that all in steak.
Right. Yeah. Right.
No. So just to give you an idea, for an average size cow, and if you got a quarter of a beef, about 110 pounds is going to be your take-home meat, and out of that, 50 pounds would be hamburger, and the rest would be in your other choices. And those, like, filet mignons and all of those, like, crazy things, that's going to take up a lot of other, that meat will, that one filet is going to take up a lot of other meats. So that's something important to think about. A half a beef, you're going to get about 220 pounds of meat, and on a whole beef, you're going to get about 440 pounds. So we sell hanging weight, so there are some things that you're probably not going to, you know, the hide and all of that. I mean, that's just how we do it with the...
Yeah, it dresses out about 60 to 62%. So if you go out and you say, oh, I want that calf, and that weighs 1,000 pounds, you're going to get about 400 pounds.
440 pounds of meat.
Yep.
And I just started doing soup bones.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'll buy those. I mean, I put it in the crock pot for like 4 days with an onion and some. I can't buy that stuff in the box anymore. Like I said, I'm becoming a food snob, and I think that's what we need to get our people to understand: is it's okay to be a food snob, and it's okay to buy local, and it's a little bit of work, but hey, it's awesome. Question?
So at the Johnson County Fair, there's the pork day where mm-hmm. the pork producers get to have their pig, and then the cow day where the
Johnson
producers
mm-hmm.
get to have. Kids from the 4-H with their animals. What percentage of those people that are here are growers like you, and what percentage are coming from more concentrated animal feeding operations?
So I'll repeat Liz's question. At the 4-H grounds, you see, yeah, the pork producers, and you have the beef producers, and you have the 4-H kids showing their animals. What percentage of those are raising their animals as this table is representing?
I don't know.
But Dennis is with the pork.
It's hard. I'm on the Johns County Cattlemen Board. It's hard to say. I'm going to say less than 40%. Most of them people that are come to the fair, show livestock, whatever, they come from a small farm, acreage, 10 acres or less, and they usually purchase their animal from somebody else. Hate to say that, but that's the way it is. Yeah, a lot of cattlemen grow show cattle, show pigs, and some of these people, they work in town, and they understand what I'm saying? I get it. It's hard to explain, well, but I'm saying about 40%.
Like a bucket cow. You can have a calf, like we have a set of twins. The mom will not accept the first one. She's accepting the second one. That's the thing that we're doing. We're bottle feeding it. There are a lot of 4-H kids that will then buy a bucket bottle calf, and they'll raise it. But a lot of times they're buying it from someone that they know and not hopefully. But the Johnson County, the problem with a lot of our local 4-H groups is there's not a lot of kids. When I was in 4-H, it was huge. They used to show how many cattle. I mean, the Hebels had a whole barn to themselves with the cattle, but we don't have that anymore. And our numbers of kids that are actually involved in 4-H that are actually showing animals is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And so that continues, you know, that's a little bit of a problem. But the average, some of these people only have 30 or 40 calves or 30, 40 cows that are on the 4-H. It seems to be a little bit more than that, than the people that are doing the large hog, are the large.
Does that answer your question? Is that what you want to know?
A little bit. If I just, when I come to the fair and they're, and I'm going to eat the meat that's being served at the fair, I'm assuming that that's coming from, because if they say Johnson County Cattlemen's Association, I'm assuming that's a cow that came from Johnson County.
Correct.
Is that safe?
That is safe to say. At least for the cattlemen. I can't talk about the rest of them.
But that doesn't guarantee that it was processed or produced, grown in a way of like what you guys have been talking about.
No.
True.
That's exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So would there be a way to have a polyculture sort of day at the county fair that would be a marketing way to advertise?
What a good idea.
I realize there's a touchy subject between separating yourself from the concentrated animal feeding people and the locally pasture raised people. I know there's
But that's a great idea to talk to the county about doing that.
Happened, you know, so that people could have a taste test. When we do, you know, Seed Savers does a tomato tasting where you can taste all these different varieties of tomato. Why couldn't we have something like that?
We do that at the fairways and the hy-vees. The cattlemen will go out and we'll have the process. And then we'll have the homegrown side by side. Usually we do it on Mother's Day and Father's Day. So if you happen to be out running around on those days, cattlemen are usually out doing taste samples of fresh meat and processed meat. Yes.
Lisa, do you want to?
I just wanted to say that.
You want a microphone so people can. So I don't
repeat it. 5 minutes.
The Board of Supervisors has no control over the fair itself, and probably many of you know that. So the Johnson County Agricultural Association does, and they would be the entity to approach with your ideas or requests and things like that. And like I said, if you already knew that, I don't want to insult anybody, but publicly there has been some recent confusion about what the Board of Supervisors can do at the fair. So just wanted to put that out there.
But that's a really good recommendation. I personally will follow.
I might add real quick too that that's also a strong idea, just because amongst people who are maybe solely interested in trying some different local foods, that there's a lot of, at least in the hog world, there's a lot of difference between different types of breeds in the coloring and flavor and fat content and all those kind of things, that even if it's not some kind of competition, I mean, I don't think that everything's always something's best or not necessarily. It might just be there's a difference in you really like this one versus, you know, she really likes this one or whatever.
Raised on acorn or an orchard versus.
Exactly. Like
yeah, just like honey and
types,
bees.
You know, imply different flavors or impart to the meat. So I think that's a really, really good idea.
The idea is at the fairgrounds, having a portion of the fair where people could come visit and compare local raised meats that were raised in the methods that the table panel does versus ones that are more in confined situations or not local. And so people could have opportunity to see and taste the difference between those options. And we have 1 minute left. Is it a quick one?
Very quick. My name is Jean Donahue, and I took over the management of the Winter Farmers Market for the fairgrounds this winter after the former business manager left. It was always Brenda's idea to try to incorporate some kind of a farmers market local food in the fair.
That
was her idea. It never...
So we'll
So, compliment to that would be a good idea, and we can maybe get some more energy behind her good idea and see it happen. So I'm going to take us to the last slide, Mike, to the very last slide. Last slide. One more slide. That was the last slide. Field of Family has on the link where to find local foods, so a list of all the farmers. Michelle's working with a group of University of Iowa students. They're going to be revamping that website, but where you can see a list of local farmers who produce meats or vegetables. So I wanted to put a shout out. And can you all join me in thanking our panel for their time tonight?